thank you very much for coming to this program. Since the order of the day is to do a seminar, we've chosen to do a seminar on Bhagavad Gita as it is. Chapter 7. And we're going to start with text 1. Sri Bhagavan Vacha, Maya Shaktamana Partha Yogam Yunjan Manashriya Asangshayam Samagram Mam Vita Gyasisi Tachchunu. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "Now hear, O son of Pritha, how by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, with mind attached to me, you can know me in full, free from doubt." Purport. In this seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the nature of Krishna consciousness is fully described. Krishna is full in all opulences, and how he manifests such opulences is described herein. Also, four kinds of people, fortunate people, who become attached to Krishna, and four kinds of unfortunate people who never take to Krishna, are described in this chapter. In the first six chapters of Bhagavad Gita, the living entity has been described as non-material spirit soul capable of elevating himself to self-realization by different types of yogas. At the end of the sixth chapter, it has been clearly stated that the steady concentration of the mind upon Krishna, or in other words, Krishna consciousness, is the highest form of all yoga. By concentrating one's mind upon Krishna, one is able to know the absolute truth completely, but not otherwise. Impersonal Brahmajyoti, or localized Paramatma realization, is not perfect knowledge of the absolute truth, because it is partial. Full and scientific knowledge is Krishna, and everything is revealed to the person in Krishna consciousness. In complete Krishna consciousness, one knows that Krishna is ultimate knowledge beyond any doubts. Different types of yoga are only stepping stones on the path of Krishna consciousness. One who takes directly to Krishna consciousness automatically knows about Brahmajyoti and Paramatma in full. By practice of Krishna consciousness yoga, one can know everything in full, namely the absolute truth, the living entities, material nature, and their manifestations with paraphernalia. One should therefore begin yoga practice as directed in the last verse of the sixth chapter. Concentration of the mind upon Krishna, the Supreme, is made possible by prescribed devotional service in nine different forms, of which Shravanam is the first and most important. The Lord therefore says to Arjuna, "Touch Trinu, or hear from me." No one can be a greater authority than Krishna, and therefore, by hearing from him, one receives the greatest opportunity to become a perfectly Krishna-conscious person. One has therefore to learn from Krishna directly, or from a pure devotee of Krishna, not from a non-devotee upstart, puffed up with academic education. Om Gaanatami Handasya Giranjana Shalakaya Chakshurn Militam Dina Tasmai Shri Gurave Nama Shri Chaitanamanapistam Sthapitam Jena Bhutane Shayam Rupa Kodavayam Tathati Shavalantikam Mandeham Shri Gurga Shri Jutapada Kamalan Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raganathan Vitam Stam Sativam Shadvetam Shavadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lodita Sri Vishakhan Vitamsha He Krishna Karana Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kam Shana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Bodhi Priye Vanchako Patagubhyascha Kapasindho Bhyevacha Potita Nam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Maya Sakta Mana Partha. This Maya Sakta Mana means mind fixed at Krishna, attached to Krishna, asakta. Asakti means attachment. Maya asakta. The trouble is the mind is attached to all garbage. This is essentially the problem. The mind is attached to all mind is attached to its own products. Just like a man or a woman is attached to its child, the mind is attached to its own offspring. In the form of mental concoctions. Prajahati yada kama sarvan parthavalogana. Our ideas of happiness are mental concoctions. And our mind is attached to all sorts of mental concoctions. But here, how to cure the mind, how to bring the mind to attachment to Krishna. How to bring the mind to attachment to Krishna. Maya sakta mana partha yogam yunjan varashriya by practicing yoga and taking shelter of Krishna. Asamshayam samabrahma, how to reach the stage of freedom from doubt. Elsewhere in the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord has said, what is that? Samshayatma vinashyati, the doubting soul is destroyed. He doesn't go anywhere. What is that? For the doubting soul, there's happiness neither in this world nor the next. Doubt means ignorance. Doubt means ignorance. We're doubting something because we don't know. Do you think this is an honest person? I doubt it. It means you're not sure. You don't know if he's honest, dishonest. But if you know, then you say definitely not, or definitely so. But doubtful means not sure, or ignorant. So at the present moment, we're ignorant about our own position, and we're ignorant about Krishna's position. But asamshaya means clearance of doubts. Elsewhere, doubts are compared to demons. And Krishna is Adisudana, Madhusudana, killer of the demons. So these demons in the form of doubts are holding us back. These, Prabhupada mentions the academicians. They're another form of, they're doubt mongers, is actually what they are. The professional duty of the academic is to doubt. Everything has to be presented as something possible, something tentative. It seems to me that the data possibly tends to indicate, it seems to me that from the excavations, it's likely that, as mentioned by Professor such and such, da-da-da-da-da. And particularly to take a mundane view of things, to sit on the sidelines and take a mundane view, even in matters of spiritual life. The academic, of course, modern academic especially, has to take a mundane, non-committed, doubtful view of everything, and never put his money on the line. There are, of course, exceptions, but so often we find this. That someone's teaching Bhagavad Gita or commenting on Bhagavad Gita, but of course he doesn't believe that Bhagavad Gita is anything like the truth. It's just the set of beliefs of some certain group of people. So that kind of position, he's doubtful. Otherwise he would have surrendered to Krishna. But he's doubtful about Krishna. Or he has no doubts, he's just absolutely dismisses Krishna. Although he's reading Krishna's book, teaching Krishna's book, but his first teaching is that you can toss out Krishna. So, maya sapta mana, his mind doesn't become attached to Krishna, it becomes attached to its own speculative ideas. But here the process is different. I'm not going to read Bhagavad Gita as a speculative study, as some source material for a course, but it's actually for understanding how the mind can become attached to Krishna. These six chapters, inner six chapters Srila Prabhupada mentions, are like the essence of Bhagavad Gita. First six chapters explain the position of the soul as non-material substance, and they explain karma yoga. Last six chapters explain Jnana Yoga. And the middle six are particularly devoted to Bhakti Yoga. The Prabhupada mentions it's like a book. The covers are the outside and the inner part is the substance. Or like a sandwich. There's the bread on this side, bread on that side, and substance is in the middle. So the main substance of Bhagavad Gita is particularly presented in these middle six chapters. Of course, every chapter is important, and every chapter is preaching devotional service. But these seven through 12 are particularly concerned with devotional service. Now, Srila Prabhupada is glossing, touch trinu, just hear from me. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, this process of understanding Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the absolute truth, is described in the second chapter of the first canto as follows. Notice Prabhupada's language. Prabhupada says, the process of understanding Krishna, the personality of Godhead, the absolute truth. You'd never get that out of the mouth of an academic. He could not extract those words from his not-so-lotus mouth. He has to refer to Krishna as the purported speaker of the Bhagavad Gita. Can't even call him the purported speaker of the Bhagavad Gita, or the something, but not the absolute truth. He will never begin his course by saying, now we're going to read a book spoken by Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the absolute truth. He never said that. Regarded as the absolute truth by the followers of the Hindu Vaishnava sect. Here Prabhupada just straight out. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, the personality of Godhead, speaking. That's all. No doubt, assumption, summary. This Bhagavad Gita, as it is coming from the pen of a person who's actually attached to Krishna, Maya Sakta. And Maya Sakta Mana. And a person who's actually free from doubts. So when we hear Bhagavad Gita as it is, and we become attached to Krishna, and we become free from doubts. And when we hear from the upstart, as Srila Prabhupada mentions, the upstart puffed up with academic education, and then no such good result. So, as Prabhupada cites, second chapter, first canto, Srinvatam Sukata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtanaha Hridyantaksto Hibhadrani idhu nauti surhitsatam nashtaprayeshu bhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavatyutama shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtiki tada rajastamo bhava kamalo bhadayaschaye chetaitar anabiddham stitam satve prasidati evam prasanna manaso bhagavat bhakti yogataha bhagavat tattva vijnanam mukta sangasya jayate bhidyate hridaya grantis chidyante sarva sanshaya kshiyante chasya karmani drishta evatmani shre. To hear about Krishna from Vedic literatures, or to hear from him directly through the Bhagavad Gita, is itself religious activity, righteous activity. And for one who hears about Krishna, Lord Krishna, who is dwelling in everyone's heart, acts as a best-wishing friend and purifies the devotee who constantly engages in hearing of him. In this way, a devotee naturally develops his dormant transcendental knowledge. As he hears more about Krishna from the Bhagavatam and from the devotees, he becomes fixed in the devotional service of the Lord. By development of devotional service, one becomes freed from the modes of passion and ignorance, and thus material lusts and avarice are diminished. When these impurities are wiped away, the candidate remains steady in his position of pure goodness, becomes enlivened by devotional service, and understands the science of God perfectly. Thus, bhakti yoga severs the hard knot of material affection and enables one to come at once to the stage of a samshayam samagram, understanding of the Supreme Absolute Truth, Personality of Godhead. Therefore, only by hearing from Krishna or from his devotee in Krishna consciousness can one understand the science of Krishna. These verses from Srimad Bhagavatam are very important. Srila Prabhupada includes them in the poem that he wrote on his arrival in America on the Jaladuta. They concisely tell the process for becoming Krishna conscious by hearing Srimvatam. The hearing process is described very nicely here. And step by step, how one becomes enlightened in Krishna consciousness. The conclusion is that one should hear from Krishna or from Krishna's devotee. A Vaishnava mukod girnam putam adikatamritam. Shravana naiva kartavya sarvoj chishta yatapaya. As milk touched by the lips of a serpent should be avoided, so Bhagavad Gita, heard from non-devotees, should be avoided. One should hear from the devotee of Krishna. Then this result that Arjuna is hearing about from Krishna can be achieved. Any questions so far? Yes?
Prabhupada says Krishna, the Supreme Personality of God. And he also says that he sees Krishna.
That he?
Sees Krishna. Now, what am I supposed to say? Krishna, the Supreme Personality of God? Or Krishna, whom Prabhupada told me is the Supreme Personality of God? And I have faith in him, and I read it.
Well, it's up to you. You can say that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but you have a problem, you don't believe it?
No, the problem is that my saying it would be an act of faith.
What's wrong with that?
It seems there's a difference between having faith that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God as told by the Acharya and actually knowing it.
Why?
Because I don't see Krishna, but I have faith in the words of someone who says that he sees Krishna.
That's also. Why this big thing about seeing? Do you have a mind?
Seeing in the sense.
Do you have a mind?
If I have a mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
No.
But still, you think you have one.
Yeah.
So why this big thing about seeing?
You can say seeing, or you can say having realization, or you can see.
That's all right. Realization. You don't have any realization?
Of Krishna, you mean?
Yeah.
Even if I have, if I can say that I have, it's not in there. I don't see Krishna. I don't see Krishna. As in saying what Prabhupada said, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God. He says it because it's not something, he didn't simply hear it and he's repeating. He just knows it. He's seeing Krishna. Is there a relationship with him?
Of course.
There's definitely a difference between.
That's a telephone ring, or that's a fire truck? but now we have a problem. Someone's come in. do we have another chair? I think he's bringing you a chair. Or else he's answering the phone. It's hard to say. But we'll arrange for a chair for you. Our method of seeing is to see through the eyes of the Acharya. When we have faith in the words of the spiritual master and the Acharyas and the Vedic literature, this is our method of seeing. It's not simply by... yes, this is our method of seeing. The person who has faith in the words of the Acharya can see. And the person who has no faith can't see. So we might wish that we have greater realization than we have. That's commendable even. But it doesn't prevent us. Just like we see someone's, the child is going to take something, we say, don't take that, it's poison. Well, how do you know? Did you try it? Have you sampled it to find out that it's poison? But we see that it's written poison on the box, it says poison. Or we've heard from reputable authority that this stuff is poison. So we don't waste time and say, according to such and such, this is poison. Of course, I'm not sure, but it seems like good chance that it's likely that data tends to indicate we take it, it's poison. Because the authority has said so. So we feel confident that we can tell people Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God. We may or may not have full realization, but we have sufficient realization. Otherwise, what are we doing here? We have sufficient realization that we take it, we can take it on faith. I'm not wasting my life, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God. Even on analysis, that Krishna means most wealthy, most famous, most strong, most beautiful, most intelligent, most renounced. So, who else can be God? Except the person who has all these opulences. And that's Krishna, means all attractive. Is that right?
Thank you.
Mm. Of course, the more our faith becomes strong by realization, the more powerful our words will become. Mm. Therefore, once you hear from a pure devotee of the Lord, the sound will be most potent. But even a beginning devotee, if he repeats faithfully, the words themselves will have potency. Yes?
Maharaj, just thinking about the story you were saying, that I have a comment.
Mm.
Recently, involved in a dreadful motorway accident.
Mm-hmm.
And they are lucky to be alive, really, God's grace, Krishna's grace. Mm. I suffer from the same sort of doubts that don't have that. Though reading Srila Prabhupada's books, chanting, doing everything, it was very difficult to really. There's always a nagging doubt in the back of the mind.
Mm.
And why it is there is that, you know, the theory and practice. Actually, jnana and vijnana, Srila Prabhupada. There's a big difference, and there's a chasm of a difference between the two.
Mm.
But when you face death face to face, you see it the way it is, then you begin to realize that whatever Srila Prabhupada says is right. Mm. Especially when things happen to you personally.
Mm.
So I feel it's up to Krishna's mercy to finally, he is the one who really knows all the doubts when the time is right.
Mm.
But I think the thing to do is to just remember them personally.
Mm. It's a process. We faithfully hear and follow the process, and Krishna in his own way does the needful, so that it becomes practical, realized knowledge. In the beginning, we more or less mechanically repeat what we've heard, or we accept, well, okay, that's what the man said, that's what the authority said, so we have to accept it. And we do so maybe grudgingly, even theoretically. But by Krishna's mercy, from time to time, we have some experience. And the experience fortifies our faith or our realization. Mm-hmm. One becomes an experienced devotee. Good, thank you. Anything else here? Yes?
I've got some questions left over from yesterday, but if you want to wait to the end.
A little loud, please.
I've got some questions left over from yesterday's class.
You have some questions left over from yesterday's class. Well, where are we going to fit those in?
I can fit those in. Well, if you would really mind, I can fit them in there.
Well, let's continue with today's class, because then you can have some questions left over from today's class, too. Gyanam teham savig gyanam idam vaksham yasheshita yaj gatva neha puryo nyaj gatavyam avishishita. This fits right in. I shall now declare unto you in full this knowledge, both phenomenal and numinous. This being known, nothing further shall remain for you to know. Purport. Complete knowledge includes knowledge of the phenomenal world, the spirit behind it, and the source of both of them. This is transcendental knowledge. The Lord wants to explain the above-mentioned system of knowledge because Arjuna is Krishna's confidential devotee and friend. In the beginning of the fourth chapter, this explanation was given by the Lord, and it is again confirmed here. Complete knowledge can be achieved only by the devotee of the Lord in disciplic succession directly from the Lord. Therefore, one should be intelligent enough to know the source of all knowledge, who is the cause of all causes and the only object for meditation in all types of yoga practice. When the cause of all causes becomes known, then everything knowable becomes known, and nothing remains unknown. The Vedas say, Kasmin bhagavo vigyate sarvamidam vigyatam pavati. Well, this directly carries on from your point. There are two kinds of knowledge mentioned here. are Gyanam and Vijnanam. Gyanam, of course, it's explained in a somewhat different way here in today's purport. But Prabhupada's usual explanation is that Gyanam means theoretical knowledge, and Vijnanam means realized knowledge. Or sometimes that Prabhupada says experienced knowledge, Vijnanam. Or sometimes Prabhupada calls it applied knowledge, or assimilated knowledge. Vijnana, this is an intensifier. Super gyan. Super gyan. Vijnana. Gyanam teham sa vijnanam. So that assimilated knowledge, Prabhupada explains that when knowledge is assimilated, you can apply it. You may read a book on surgery and you could theoretically explain how to do a surgical operation. That's Gyan. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you could pick up the scalpel and do the job. But once you're properly trained and you can do that, that's big Gyan. Apply, it means you've assimilated the knowledge. You can actually... assimilated means you can apply it. Or Prabhupada sometimes explains that Vijnana means you could explain it in your own words. In the beginning, we can repeat what we've heard word for word. When you've assimilated it, then you can understand it. You could explain it in your own words also. Which doesn't mean now you're able to concoct and elaborate and just come up with something new. But it means you've understood it so well that you can explain it in a realized way. You've understood it. You've understood it. Vijnan. Applied knowledge, realized knowledge, experienced knowledge, assimilated knowledge. Or Prabhupada sometimes translates Vijnan as science. Science. It probably explains science in that way as being assimilated knowledge that you can apply. Vijnanam. Gyanam teham suvijnanam idam bhakshami asheshata yajgyatva bhuyam iha bhuyam yaj gyantam yam visheshate asheshata avisheshate, that nothing else will remain. Vasudeva sarvamiti, Krishna is everything. When we understand the subject, this subject matter, Hare Krishna, Krishna subject matter, then what else is there? You've understood Krishna. Now what's the second subject? That's everything. Vasudeva Sarvamiti. But the Krishna subject matter will be explained in terms of Krishna and his various manifestations. It's not just we say, all right, Krishna is everything, that's it. Well, how is Krishna everything? When we say Krishna is everything, what does it mean? What does it mean? For the Mayavadi, Krishna is everything. Means everything is Krishna. Means I'm also Krishna, you're also Krishna, everything is Krishna. But for the Vaishnava, there's a particular understanding. What is that? Vishishtadvaita. Everything is one, but everything has distinct identity. Distinct identity. And that will be explained in this chapter. Krishna and his energies. Actual understanding of Krishna means understanding Krishna with his energies. Just like understanding the government. It doesn't mean just understanding who the king is. But it means understanding what the king's powers are. Then you understand something about the king. Just to say, who is the king? The king is the greatest. Okay, the king is the greatest. How is the king the greatest? Well, he has the greatest army, he has the greatest police force, he has the greatest queen, he's got the greatest treasury, he's got the greatest palace, he's got... Therefore. Or president of the United States, he's commander-in-chief of the armed forces, he has a veto power, he has certain... capabilities that make him present. So when we speak of God or Krishna, he has certain features, powers, Or he has energies, shaktis. Prasya shaktir vividaiva shruyate. Shravanaki gana bhulakriyacha. In the Upanishads it said, the Absolute Truth has variegated energies. The problem with the Mayavadis is that they want to de-energize the Absolute Truth, or they want to turn the Absolute Truth purely into energy and not recognize that energies have a source. So here in the Bhagavad Gita, the personality of Godhead will be explained with his energies. Good, I knocked everything over this morning or the evening. A positive sign. Any other questions? Okay. Yes?
What is it that actually stops us from actually having realizations and knowledge?
What stops us from having realization, knowledge? Good question. Of course, we can say immediately the Maya stops us, or ignorance stops us. We've been accustomed to ignorance since time immemorial, and we're sticking to ignorance. A person who's convinced of the wrong thing has a hard time getting the story straight. This is usually the problem. Someone is obstinately, not just ignorant, but obstinately convinced of his ignorance, obstinately loyal to his ignorance. If you're convinced, pick anything, any idea, and it's absolutely wrong, but you're convinced of it. As a school child, I had this, that sometimes out of pride, I had the wrong answer on the test, and I was convinced that it was right. Have you had that? That you give the wrong answer, and you're convinced that it's right. Somebody says, no, it's this. No, it's this. I know that it's this. It's this, definitely. And you just can't, there you are. Wrong and convinced that you're right. Ignorant and convinced of your ignorance. Or rather, convinced that your ignorance is knowledge. And only if someplace along the line it's forced upon you, all right, the dictionary says this, okay. But till then, no. So we're addicted to stubbornly persisting in our ignorant views. Within our ignorant views. And because of that stubborn obstinacy, it's difficult to get knowledge. Particularly, there's this stubborn dedication to the idea that there's happiness in this material world and that we can get it. That we're enjoyers, I'm this body, that this is mine, that I'm something which in fact I'm not. This stubborn obstinacy makes it difficult to get knowledge. Otherwise, a person who's receptive and who hears from right sources can quickly get knowledge. Oh, I didn't know that, really. But a person who thinks he knows, if we probably gives the example, some music school, if you don't know anything about music, then they charge you a high price to learn. And if you do know something about music, they charge you double. Because first they have to unteach you. So this is a great obstacle. Therefore, again, this warning, not to hear from the academics, from the non-devotees, from the Mayavadis, because then you become convinced that you know something, and in fact what you know is wrong. better not to hear than to hear from the wrong source. Is that okay?
The spirit soul is pure, similar to Krishna in quality, but then after death, if somebody has done some mistakes, why Yamdutas take the soul and punish the soul? The soul is pure, so why should they punish? That's what it says.
Soul is pure, but the soul has become addicted to that which is impure. Soul is pure, but he's addicted to that which is impure.
Addicted to what?
Something which is impure. He's attached to the impure.
But soul can't be impure.
He may not be impure.
Can't be addicted to anything.
He can't.
Spiritual.
He can't, but he is.
Huh?
He can't, but he is. The example given in Bhagavad Gita, Bayur Gandhai Ivashaya, that the air is pure, but the air has picked up various aromas which may not be so pure. Those who live by sewage conduits in places where sewage is less developed, know the air can pick up the, or those who live by the seashore where fishermen live, know that the air can pick up aromas and carry them. Even though the air is pure, we say, the air is fishy today. And someone may say, no, the air is always pure. Well, all right, but it sure smells like fish.
Not the air, the spirit soul.
I understand. The spirit soul is compared in the Bhagavad Gita to the air. As the air picks up a fishy bad smell, so the soul picks up fishy bad smell. The soul thinks, I'm a fish. Or the soul thinks, I'm a fisherman. And so he becomes associated with the body of a fish, body of a fisherman, the activities of a fish or a fisherman. And therefore he gets the karmic reactions of a fish. Well, not a fish, but a fisherman. He's subject to the karmic reactions that the fish has to undergo, or the fisherman has to go. He's pure, but he becomes subject. Yes.
I'm in the car with my mother one day, and she's trying to convince me of the, like she's saying, oh, just look how beautiful nature is, and I'm going on the wavelength that, you know, this material world is full of misery, it's a place of death, you know, so on and so forth. And she's convinced that it's, you know, the beauty of nature, and I'm trying to get across that, you know, this is just a perverted reflection of the true beauty, the true nature, the spiritual nature. What would you say to sort of completely smash that argument?
Depends who I was talking to. I might just figure that smashing was a lost cause under the circumstances, depending on who I was talking to and when.
She's not a lost cause.
This is your mom?
Yeah.
Okay.
She's great.
Yeah, she's great, but maybe she's a lost cause as far as convincing her that the sunset's not so nice. That's what I mean to say. If you're not getting anywhere with, it's nasty looking. Then you might try some other tack, such as, yeah, okay, fine, and then you go on to something else. Or, if the sunset is beautiful, then how beautiful is Krishna, who is creating millions of sunsets? Karmi aphorism is no use beating your head against the wall. If you're not getting anywhere with one insight or realization, and you're trying and trying and not getting anywhere, then look for a different point of entry. Like thieves, you know, if they can't, smugglers. If they can't get through in one border point, then they find another border point and they get their goods across. If they see this port is well guarded and the immigration, the customs guys really have their stuff together, and they find some other place where it's not so carefully guarded, where the customs guys are ignoramuses, or they don't care, or they're drivable, or they're drunk, or whatever. They find some place where they can get through. So if you're not getting through with one point, try another. No use just beating your head against the wall. Thus saith the Karmis. Ah, another question. Okay, we'll carry on here. Manusyanam sahasreshu kaschid yatati siddhye. Yatatam api siddhanam kaschin man veti tattvata. Out of many thousands among men, one may endeavor for perfection, and of those who have achieved perfection, hardly one knows me in truth. Purport. There are various grades of men, and out of many thousands, one may be sufficiently interested in transcendental realization to try to know what is the self, what is the body, and what is the absolute truth. Generally, mankind is simply engaged in the animal propensities, namely eating, sleeping, defending, and mating. And hardly anyone is interested in transcendental knowledge. The first six chapters of the Gita are meant for those who are interested in transcendental knowledge, in understanding the self, the super-self, and the process of realization by Jnana Yoga, Dhyana Yoga, and discrimination of the self from matter. However, Krishna can be known only by persons who are in Krishna consciousness. Other transcendentalists may achieve impersonal Brahman realization, for this is easier than understanding Krishna. Krishna is the Supreme Person, but at the same time, he is beyond the knowledge of Brahman and Paramatma. The yogis and jnanis are confused in their attempts to understand Krishna. Although the greatest of the impersonalists, Sripad Shankaracharya, has admitted in his Gita commentary that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his followers do not accept Krishna as such, for it is very difficult to know Krishna, even though one has transcendental realization of impersonal Brahman. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the cause of all causes, the primeval Lord, Govinda. Ishvara Parama Krishna, Sachidananda Vigraha, Anadi Radhir Govinda Sarvakarana Karana. It is very difficult for the non-devotees to know him. Although non-devotees declare that the path of bhakti or devotional service is very easy, they cannot practice it. If the path of bhakti is so easy as the non-devotee class of men proclaim, then why do they take up the difficult path? Actually, the path of bhakti is not easy. The so-called path of bhakti practiced by unauthorized persons without knowledge of bhakti may be easy. But when it is practiced factually according to the rules and regulations, the speculative scholars and philosophers fall away from the path. Srila Rupa Goswami writes in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Shruti Smriti Puranadi Pancharatra Vidim Vina Vaikantiki Harir Bhaktir Pataya Vakopite. Devotional service of the Lord that ignores the authorized Vedic literatures like the Upanishads, Puranas, and Narada Pantaratra is simply an unnecessary disturbance to society. Nice argument. The speculators say the path of bhakti is easy, it's for the saps. But they can't take to it. If it's easy, why are you going the hard way? Fact is, manusyanam sahasreshu kaschid yatati siddhaye. The siddhas are those who have attained Brahman realization or Paramatma realization. The impersonal, if one understands I'm not this body, I'm spirit, soul, then he's perfect. He's attained perfection. He knows aham brahmasmi. I'm spirit, not matter. Or if he knows that there's a supreme spirit, if he's Brahman realized, that's perfection. But and out of thousands, one person understands that. Mostly people are karmis. Work. Gotta work. No time, gotta work. And out of thousands and thousands of such karmis, one may understand the absolute in its impersonal feature. And yadatamapi siddhanam, out of many siddhas, kashchin mam veti tat. Someone, one person may understand Krishna. It's not such a cheap thing in Bhagavad Gita to understand Krishna as the highest perfection, because Krishna is the origin of the Brahmajyoti, Brahmanohi Pratishtha. Everything's resting on Krishna. Krishna is the supreme cause of all causes, sarva karma karma. It is not possible for the Brahman realized impersonalist or the Paramatma realized yogi to understand the Krishna, the supreme personality of Godhead, as the son of Mother Yashoda or the charioteer of Arjuna. There's some very nice prayer in Srila Rupa Goswami's Padyavali. There's two prayers. One says something to the effect that who can I tell that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is playing like a coward, that the Supreme Brahman, the impersonal absolute truth, is playing like a coward boy. And there's another prayer that some people worship the Shrutis, the Vedas and the Upanishads, and others may worship the Smritis, the Mahabharata and Puranas. But I want to worship Nanda Maharaj because the absolute truth is playing in his yard. Absolute truth is playing in his yard. This is the postgraduate stage of realization. Some highly elevated souls are absorbed in the worship of the Shrutis. Other highly elevated sages are engaged in the study of the Smritis, the Puranas. But where will we find such a person as Nanda Maharaj, who has the object of realization of the Upanishads playing in his yard? Yatatam api siddhana kashchan mam veti tatata. Even the great demigods are sometimes confused about Krishna. Muyanti yat surya. Mam tu veta na kashchan. No one knows me as I am, the Lord says. And if one does know him, then sa mahatma sadurlabha. Such a great soul is very rare. Therefore, unless one practices devotional service to the Lord, one cannot know Krishna as he is, tatvatah, even though one is a great scholar or philosopher. Only the pure devotees can know something of the inconceivable transcendental qualities in Krishna, in the cause of all causes, in his omnipotence and opulence, and in his wealth, fame, strength, beauty, knowledge, and renunciation. Because Krishna is benevolently inclined to his devotees, he is the last word in Brahman realization, and the devotee alone can realize him as he is. Therefore it is said, Atas Sri Krishna Namadi Nam Pave Grahyam Indriyai Sevan Mukehi Jivado Swayameva Spuratyadaha. No one can understand Krishna as he is by the blunt material senses, but he reveals himself to the devotees, being pleased with them for their transcendental loving service unto him. This further treats upon the question of realization. Realization becomes possible when Krishna reveals himself. You can't force realization. Realization comes by the mercy of Krishna. You can do and do and do, and if Krishna withholds, you won't realize. And when Krishna desires, then everything can be revealed. Therefore, the secret is yasya deve prabhaptir yata deve tatagro tasya ite katita hirata prakashante nana. When one has full devotion to the Lord and full devotion to the spiritual master, bona fide spiritual master, then everything is revealed. It's not simply by a speculative process. We read Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, that gentleman was asking yesterday that, what was that? That you don't, why do you need a spiritual master? You can just direct yourself. You can just approach Krishna directly. And what will you do with this verse? That Krishna reveals himself to one who has full faith in him and full faith in the spiritual master. You have to revise it. Krishna reveals himself to one who has full faith in him and full faith in him. But it's said in the Shrutis, yasya deve prabhaktir yata deve tadagro, simultaneous faith in Krishna and the bona fide spiritual master. Not just Krishna. What are you going to do with all these verses? Kick them out? Spiritual master is unnecessary. Spiritual master is necessary. Otherwise, what is the meaning of this verse? Therefore, I said, you can argue, but you want to argue against Krishna. Not that I'm Krishna, but I'm only speaking what Krishna is saying. It's not my fault. This is what Krishna says. This is what the Shastra says. Spiritual master is required. And you may argue, well, I'm kind of doing fine in devotional service without a spiritual master. But Krishna doesn't agree. Shruti Smriti Puranadi. I'm on the fast track of devotional service. You may be going the slow, hard route, following all these rules and regulations. I'm just developing love of Krishna. But without the rules and regulations. I'm making advancement by playing tennis with the net down. That's not the way you play tennis. You may think that you're making great advancement because you're getting high scores with the net down. That's not the way to do it. One has to follow these Shrutis, Smritis, Puranas, Pancharatrabhiti. Otherwise, Hare Bhaktir Vaikantiki Utpataya. Otherwise, you're off the track and you're making it hard for others also. There's so many. This is called sahaja, cheap, taking devotional service the cheap way. Well, you can get there by your sincerity alone. And the rules and regulations and all these processes and stuff, that's, I don't know why that has to be there. You just devote yourself to Krishna. So that's not the process. We have to devote ourselves to Krishna, that's a fact. And sincerity is crucial, that's a fact. But if we're sincere, we'll take up the process given by Krishna in the Shastras. Not that we simply say, I'm sincere. Give me a degree, I'm sincere. Take the exam. No, I'm sincere. Attend the classes. But I'm so sincere. If you're sincere, if you're genuinely sincere, you'll do the work, you'll attend the courses, you'll take the exam, you'll get the degree. Otherwise, you'll be a kook, a deviant. Yes?
You can accept Krishna himself as the spiritual master, can't you?
Krishna is the spiritual master, and Krishna says, accept someone as spiritual master. Accept my devotee as spiritual master. So if we accept Krishna as the spiritual master, Bande Krishna Jagat Guru, but Krishna himself accepted a spiritual master, and he teaches that one should accept his devotee as spiritual master. Is that right? question? Yes.
John, I'm wondering, you talk about paramatma realization. Mm-hmm. Sometimes when you talk to people on the street and you offhandedly say, yeah, Krishna is everything, Krishna is in your heart, they agree. But could you possibly give some indication as to what they think?
Oh, what?
What they think that Krishna, God in the heart is?
What they think God in the heart is? Something. They think God is something. What they think, I don't know. Likely they don't think he's the four-armed form of Narayan. That's not what your standard British citizen has this concept of God in the heart. They have some idea, though. They have some experience. If they accept that God is in the heart, that means they have some experience that there's a higher source of inspiration, there's a higher something in the heart. Generally, they're vague about it. Generally, they don't. If you ask them what they mean, you know, they're the authority. Ask them, what do you mean, God is in your heart? Well, he's in the heart, right? Kingdom of God is within, right? They generally don't have a clear understanding or an understanding that they can clearly articulate. Which doesn't, and some men, you know, there may be some pious persons who have a more mature experience of God's presence within their heart, not to mock them or denigrate them, they may have something. But generally those who are addicted to sense gratification, it's just something they've heard, God is within the heart. People may also have some experience that when there's a crunch, when there's a difficulty, they may pray to God and they may get some inspiration from within. So people may intuitively understand that God, whatever God is in the heart. But generally still, because they're lacking clear direction, they'll have some impersonal idea of God in the heart. Generally people are adherents of an impersonal idea simply for lack of knowledge. If you don't know somebody, all you have is a name, then you don't have a picture. You don't have a clear, you don't know if he's white or he's black or he's British or American or Indian or tall or short or thin or fat or glasses or no glasses or brown hair or black hair, no hair. You don't know. So you have an impersonal idea. Then if you meet the person, or if you get detailed description of the person, then you say, no, that's not him. He's got glasses and he's fat. You get a personal picture. So generally people have an impersonal understanding of God simply for lack of knowledge. Yes?
I've been trying to explain to someone or some people that they're not the body or the mind, they're the soul, right? And using certain examples, like I'm saying, you're observing the thought forms that come in, so there's the observer and the observer, and still they won't agree. And I say, well, your body's gone through a change, 7 years it's changed, you know, and it's gone through a complete metamorphosis, and still they're just so brick-headed, you know, they're not going to accept, yeah. So what would be pinnacle of the best argument to use?
Here it takes some prasadam. There's no one best argument. All the arguments are good. The best argument is the one that works, but that varies from person to person and time to time. After a certain amount of effort, you may give up. You may decide that, okay, I'll leave you with this much. And, you know, sometimes the best argument is, okay, think about it. You know, that's not a bad argument. Sometimes people, they may think that you've said something a little, but they don't want to agree. That's too much to say you're right. Then that's going a little bit far. But if you say, okay, well, anyway, that's what Krishna says, and you know, take it home and then chew on it, you know, think about it. That's a nice argument. That's a nice argument. Anyway, think about it. What's the person going to say? No, I won't think about it. Yeah, especially if you add something like you're intelligent, you take one home and think about it. Nobody's going to argue, no, I'm not intelligent. Given some time, the person may think, yeah, he said something. There was something to what he said. I am intelligent. Something else.
There's that philosophy that Achinch Veda Veda Sattva, we're simultaneously one with Krishna and we're different. And I've also read in Prabhupada's books that we can be 75% full in Krishna consciousness. And in yesterday's class you said that that you can be as you can know Krishna as much as he allows you to.
Mm-hmm.
So does this mean you can exceed the level of 75% and you can even get Shiva?
Well, let's get this percentage thing right. It's not what percentage of Krishna you can know. You have to get straight what this percentage is. It's the percentage of qualities of Krishna that one can possess. Is for living being 68%? 78? Been a while since I read the brush up on my statistics here. 78%. Krishna has 64 qualities, right? So of those 64 qualities, a living being can have 50. Just like to be eternal, that's a quality of Krishna. But you have that quality. To be this or that, you can have a clever. Krishna is clever, you can also be clever. So you can have up to 50 of Krishna's 64 qualities, right? Then Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, they can have even more of them. Even Narayan has more. And then you get to Krishna, he has four qualities that even Narayan doesn't have. So we can have some percentage of Krishna's qualities, but only to in limited quantity. Krishna's clever, and you're clever. But Krishna's a lot more clever than you are. A lot more clever than I am. Because we're tiny. We're tiny. So being tiny, we can have 50 of Krishna's qualities in tiny proportion. Yes?
Well, if we're infinitely less than Krishna, because he's infinite and we're infinitesimal.
Mm-hmm. So
then, because Krishna's infinite and we're infinitesimal part and parcels, wouldn't be having 78% of Krishna's qualities meaning we have literally nothing? Because Krishna's infinite. But 75%, 78% of infinity is... I can't really get my mind around it, but 78% of infinity doesn't, you know, where do you begin?
There are specific qualities. This is 78% of infinity, 78% of 64.
Oh, okay,
This you can do the mathematics on. There are other things you can't do the math on. This you can actually do. You know, when you get to things like 4,300,000 times 1,000 times 3 times 12, that gets a little rough. This is easy. It's simply 78% of 64, which I'll take on faith comes to 50 or thereabout, right? Without my calculator, but 50. Krishna has 64 qualities, you can have 50. It's simple as that. But to the extent to which you can have those 50 qualities is very small. Like the ocean, it can be salty, and the drop can be salty, but the drop can't be as salty as the ocean. It can't have as much salt as the ocean has. It has a little drop's worth. You can have a little drop's worth of each of those 50 qualities. Then there are some qualities you can't even have, but of the 50, you can have a little drop's worth of each one. Is that okay?
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Anything else? Well, we're 6 minutes short. And if we start the next prayer point, we'll finish it. Yeah, maybe we will. No, we won't. Okay, your question from yesterday.
That was free actually, but I'll just show you. Nisshingadev, is it significant he jumps out of a pillar? Because I've heard in many examples used that there's four pillars of sinful life, the Dharma has the four religious pillars, you know. Is that significant that he comes out of a pillar rather than something else? Maybe it's like, I don't know. Maybe I'm reading into it too much.
You can see an architect going crazy. No. No, it's just because Hiranyakashipu chose to strike a pillar. That's it. Not special. Question number two.
Karma, is there any significance why he has an itch on his back?
Why he has an itch?
Is that significant? Is that esoteric or
whatever? It's his pastime to have an itch.
Okay. It's just a pastime. Transcendental itch.
Transcendental itch. Third question.
Okay. You were saying about the three whips of material nature, of Lanakbo, the three whips of material nature. Well, you didn't say there were three whips, but that's what I've heard somewhere else, which are, you know, miseries attained to your own mind and body. Miseries pertaining to other minds and bodies, and then the miseries of natural disasters. Now, there's a three, but I was thinking that the ones of the natural disasters, these are coming from other minds and bodies, like the demigods. So is it just two, or is it still three?
Finally, it's only one. They all come from the body and mind. When there's natural disasters, if you didn't have a body, it wouldn't be a problem. Right? Does that the problems that come from material nature wouldn't be a problem if you had a body, if you didn't have a body. It could be many droughts or tornadoes or anything. You wouldn't care if you didn't have a body. And similarly, the miseries from other living entities. Sticks and stones may break your bones, but not if you don't have any bones. So all the miseries finally come down to this body. But for our understanding, they're divided up, those that come just directly from the body, then those that are inflicted by their living entities, and those that are inflicted by nature from without. But finally, the Prabhupada explains elsewhere, the body is the breeding ground of all miseries. All the miseries are due to this body.
But what I was saying was that the demigods control the disasters.
Yes.
So you say it's coming from nature, but it could just mean that there's two, and then but it.
The demigods, demigod category and nature, they're the same. That's called adidaivic misery. That's the ones that come from nature. Nature means the demigods, because they're in control of nature. And then the adipotic, it means from other living entities. Generally, for the purpose of that analysis, it means not the demigods, although they're also living entities, but others. And people, germs, mosquitoes. That's adipotic. Adiyatmik, those are from the mind, body.